Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
And here we are. Welcome back. Movies Hate You.
What is that, a bloated pause?
I don't know what that is. That was like a Monty Python.
That was frightening, really.
It's like that, right? It's like the Monty.
Some people are still waiting for that word to get out there.
Well, you know, traditionally, Todd, on a radio show, I would have some kind of like rolling intro music where there'd be music behind me so I can kind of come in.
Well, sometimes.
I'm starting in a vacuum. I'm basically like floating in space and I have to decide, okay, 3, 2, 1. How far from the one should I start?
If you want some bed music, we can put you some bed music in. I just, you have to let me know that you want that, because that's what I do.
No, hey man, I'm not the producer here. Jeez. Hey man, you want to give me some bed music? You know, we'll do a little bit of a, you know, it's like when you do a radio spot, you know, you need to hear the line before the one you're supposed to read, because then you'll be able to read the line more authentically.
I got you.
But I like the, and here we are, Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You at gmail.com. You send me more hate mail. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. What do we got, about 5-6 million listeners right now, Todd? So you can imagine the hate mail that comes in.
I've only had like 2 letters of hate mail. One of them was from Germany.
For me or for you?
It was for you.
Oh, from Germany.
The rest have always been positive.
Was that guy in prison in Germany?
Nah, some lady who said that you seemed very uninterested in the sex subject that you had a few weeks ago.
Bull! I was popping like crazy during that show.
Yeah, come on, I know. I said, I don't think you understand the Rob's sense of humor.
No. Not many people get it, and I like that. And
it's
like
kind
that
of a dry humor. It's kind of a Bob Newhart humor.
You're like the third person in my life to tell me that.
It's good, though.
If you're not paying attention, you don't get it. And I have a new respect for Bob Newhart, who I never really cared for. But since people tell me I'm like him, I have to like him.
Well, there you go.
And let me just give the Todd Sheets VHS update really quick. Because tonight we have a very special guest, an independent filmmaker, and we have a ringing phone. An independent filmmaker is with us tonight, right here from New York City, in Brooklyn, and he'll be on in a couple minutes. But the Todd Sheets VHS report first. The Shivers, Todd. We've been following the Shivers VHS on Amazon. Now there's one brand new for $20 from like 100.
Weird.
But here's the real interesting part. There's a used copy of the Shivers for $999.99. I kid you not. So if if you don't feel like shelling out all the money for a new copy, you could always buy a used one for $1,000. You know, if you can't spare the $20, get yourself to the bank and take out the G-note for the Shivers.
Yeah, the Shivers, man. I've been remastering that a little bit, so it's getting ready to come out on DVD eventually here.
I see the pennies dropping now. It's like 99.99.91 now. Oh, great. Keep talking, Todd. Keep talking. And meanwhile, Dead Things and Violent New Breed are both sitting comfortably at $64.47, both new and used for both. So that makes me think it's the same clown selling it. Or not clown, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. The guy's just trying to make a buck off your good name.
What else is new?
Bloodthirsty Cannibal Demons, currently unavailable. Goblin, currently unavailable. Now, you know what that means?
We're going to rectify that soon, Rob.
You know what all that means? Yeah. Hey, that sounds like a good idea. You know what all that means? When it says currently unavailable, it means the first person to go up there and try to sell a Zombie Rampage is going to put like $9,000 on it.
It's scary.
I think you should be proud.
I would be proud if I could use that for a budget for the new movie.
Well,
instead, someone's buying themselves a Volkswagen, an old one.
Go into the garage, find your VHS copies of these movies, and get them up there, man. If not, burn some copies. Just sign it. And you sign it. Signed by Todd Sheets. $4,000.
That'll make it worth about 12 cents.
You're doing yourself an injury. Why do independent filmmakers put themselves down so much? That'll be one of the topics tonight, because we have an independent filmmaker with us, Todd.
That's right. That's right.
You being an independent filmmaker understands how important it is to get the word out there. Hit the streets.
It's true.
The gentleman with us tonight has been making films since 1996, right here in New York City, in Brooklyn, and maybe some other places, but we'll ask him about that. I want to say he's an exploitation filmmaker, but he might disagree with me, and I want him to if I'm wrong. His films are filled with drug use, naked women, lesbian sex, S&M, naked women, explosive violence, naked women, eye gouging, stabbing, undead killers. Did I mention naked women? Quentin Tarantino himself. Quentin Tarantino, QT, that's right, referred to this filmmaker as the king of guerrilla filmmaking. And we've got him right here. His name? Wait, first, his films, Tortured by Regret, Lust for Vengeance, Hookers in Revolt, House of the Damned, Gangs versus Cults, and many more. He is currently having a bit of a resurgence because all his films since October have been coming out on DVD. Some for the first time, some re-released. He's with us, Mr. Sean Weathers. Good evening.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Was that good?
That is a great introduction. I think it might be all downhill from here.
Oh, man. All right, let me keep going. You just be quiet. Let me keep talking.
Please do.
Oh, no.
Oh, that was awesome, man. That was awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, no. Thank you for coming on to Movies Hate You. And we're sponsored by BMovie.com, where your movies can be found. And
yes.
Here we are.
I actually went to bmovie.com like a few minutes ago, and there I saw like on the front page a trailer for Lust for Vengeance, and on like the right hand side a little ad for Hookers in Revolt. So I felt pretty good about that.
I saw that picture, man. It's a little saucy, I have to say. You know, a woman having a little fun with a gentleman there.
That gentleman is myself, by the way.
Yes. I wanted to. How did that feel to see yourself in the throes of passion right on a DVD website?
Well, it's so good because you have to go to my website to see stuff like that. You know, it felt pretty good.
I usually have to stay home and look at my own movies to see this, so it was nice to see it out there in the public. No, that's good, man. Hey, congratulations. Yeah. How many movies are out now? Five?
Five are out right now. Three of them were previously released, and two of them are getting their first real release. Because I basically sold all of them, like, you know, to myself, like to video stores and on the streets and stuff like that. But as far as like a real wide distribution, they almost die. And I made a disc of unfinished movies that I did called The Unfinished Works of Sean Weathers. Those are getting their first release, and they came out November 22nd, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
They're fresh. They're fresh on the shelves, people. Get out there.
Yeah.
You shot all the stuff. And was I correct? Your first movie was House of the Damned, right? In 96?
Yeah. 96. Okay. 96.
And some of that was shot in, because I had said kind of like caveat on the New York filmmaker, because you shot some of that in Boston, didn't you?
Yeah, I shot the exterior. Well, me and my cinematographer, went out to Boston to shoot some of the exteriors.
We don't go for technicalities here. You can make a grammatical error. Nobody's going to hold.
Can you edit that out, please?
Todd, can we get a little beep over the grammatical error?
Oh, hey, Todd. Sorry, I didn't say anything to you before. I was actually just looking at some of your trailers before I came on the show.
Wow,
some pretty gory stuff there, man. My God.
Todd has a lot of issues he's working out in this film.
I mean, that is some like really violent stuff. I'm like, I'm expecting like a trailer to give me like, you know, a bunch of setup and then maybe like one kill scene. It's just like, man.
That's not even all the stuff that's in the movie. That's just a few little clips. I didn't put the most violent stuff. I had to stay in, you know, because you can't put that anywhere. So I had to leave that in the film. But it gets worse. And then the new ones I'm working on, my God, man, it's going to make Rob have like an afro. It's going to curl his hair so bad.
They don't call you the Prince of Gore for nothing, man.
Yeah, I was seeing on IMDb you made like 34 movies.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's insane. Wow.
But I can't get him to update since 2000. I'm like pissed.
Mm-hmm. So there's even more you're saying.
It's very frustrating.
There's even more you're saying then?
Yeah, how many more? I've done like about 6 more films since then.
Oh, cool.
You're catching up to Todd, man. You've got a few unreleased ones. You got some ones coming up.
Yeah, basically when I got the deal with MVD, they just kind of wanted like to start from the beginning. And I actually, the deal got finalized several months ago, but they wanted to wait until October to start releasing them.
Mm-hmm.
So with the 5 out now, I have 5 others. One is a movie called Demented. I shot in 2003. It's a movie I wasn't able to finish because of a lot of factors, but it basically centers around a serial killer who rapes women in the Dumbo area of Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people outside of Brooklyn may not be familiar with it, but they've seen it in a lot of movies. I think it was in a couple of Giallo films as well. I just can't really think of the name of it. But, yeah, that area has been used for, like, a lot of music videos and stuff like that. And we shot a bunch of exterior rape scenes there. And, unfortunately, the actor who was playing the rapist, he couldn't take, like, the psychological strain of the film. And he actually just gave up on acting and quit the film. And
wow.
I really could... And we shot all the rape scenes. I mean, it's real graphic, real good stuff. You got the great exterior shots of the city in the background of Manhattan, and that's all I have. I wasn't able to shoot any of the dialogue scenes, so I'm just trying to figure out the best way to put that together. And then after that, I did 4 high-def softcore films that I want to release as well. So those 5 are Waiting in the Wings, and House of Damlust Revengeance, They Almost Die, The Unfinished Works, and Hookers and Revolt are available for DVD. Available on DVD at DVD.com.
Todd, this guy's on fire, man.
Oh, that's good.
He's like you. He's got 5 in the can ready to go. He's doing more. He's re-editing this, doing that. He's got 5 out on the street right now. It's crazy. Sean, how did you start? You literally were selling the film, going shop to shop, like a video store back in the day, and selling them a few copies, selling them out of your car. So tell us a little bit about those experiences, taking it to the people, so to speak, which I think is a very purist. I love to hear those stories. I love when somebody shoots a movie and then just screw it. I don't know anything about the film business. I'm just going to take it to people and get them to watch it. I love that.
Yeah. Well, basically, like I said, the first movie I did was House of the Damned in 96. And I know you guys talk a lot about because I've heard all the shows. Oh, by the way, the show for the 2nd of November, there's a dead link to that one on the website.
Oh, thanks, Todd.
So. Yeah, we were having some problems with our server. They're finally moving us, because every time I'd put a show up, it would disappear 2 days later.
Thank you, Sean, for pointing it out to Todd. And don't cut this part out, Todd.
I would never do that.
I want everyone to hear this. And also, the show, I think it's 10/16, is still missing. October 16th.
I thought it was there now.
No, I don't think so.
No, it's there now. I heard all
or the 12th. There was a missing week in there. You'll see there's one Wednesday that's skipped in October.
That might have been the one that was a bad file, though. Remember?
Oh, is that gone forever?
It might be gone forever.
Oh, what the hell did we talk about that night so we can recreate it?
I'm not sure.
Because then we'll do like 10-12, the remake. And then we'll do the show all over again. I think.
Yeah, I'm frightened at this point.
I'm frightened, man. I'm frightened. And that's how I like it. I'm frightened because I'm watching House of the Damned, which is scary.
10-12, the lost episode, right?
There you go. I like that. It's like that movie 11-11-11 that just came out and went away very quickly. Who would take the film? You didn't do it. Did you do it on VHS 96? You had it on DVD-R? How'd you produce it?
No, it's pretty much DVDs from the beginning. Basically with House of the Damned, it was kind of like I said, you guys do talk about those video stores a lot. And that's how I kind of like started off getting into film, is like going to those video stores and like looking at stuff that like Todd would make, where it's just like, you look at the box and it's just like, you're thinking, my God, I have to get this movie because the box looks so great. You know, you never see trailers for these things.
You get home and you want to kick my ass. I remember.
A zombie with his head split open, the gore coming out of it. And he took Todd's movie home and said, oh, if this guy can do it, I can do it. And that's how it Todd, you didn't even know. You influenced this guy, man.
I'm sorry.
But I love those type of movies, as I'm sure you guys do. And sometimes they weren't what they were advertised to be, but that was kind of part of the fun of it. You know, it was just like grabbing a box that looked really cool and then seeing what you got inside. I was definitely really attracted to those campy type movies. So that's why my first film was a camp type film with House of the Damned. And then, a couple years later, I did They Almost Die, which is more of like a rape revenge. And that actually came from, it started off with a recommendation from a video store owner when I was doing a rape revenge film. And like my friend told me, hey, it's a little complicated. Maybe you want to come up with something a little bit simpler. And then he mentioned I Spit on Your Grave. And then I went to the video store, asked the owner about it. He literally kept me there for like 2 hours talking about the film. And I took it home, I saw it, I'm like, you know what, I can do something even worse than this. Worse meaning like a longer rape, more graphic, more intense, more crazy. And that was my second film, The Almost Dying. It was after I made my first two that I took the time to edit them and then tried to send them to video stores and stuff like that.
The person renting stuff to people said, look, this is the kind of movie you should do. And so you went out and produced that and brought that out.
Yeah. Yeah,
I see.
Basically, his recommendation led me to watch the movie and then, like, you know, do my own take on it. So.
To me, that's awesome. That's old school. I mean, that's what, you know, the Dave Friedmans and the Sam Shermans, the producers that everybody looks up to over the years, the old school guys would do. They would go to the exhibitors, the drive-in exhibitors, and say, well, what kind of movies are playing? Well, you know, we're making a lot of money with biker movies right now. They ran right out and made a biker movie. It was there's a lot of kind of navel gazing in independent film where it's like, well, I want to make a zombie movie. Well, look at the market first before you make a zombie. Are there too many zombie movies? Is your movie going to get lost in the shuffle? Talk to people who sell DVDs. Go to the store, see what the top renter is, see what the top seller is, whatever that is, and try to work your creative ideas into that. I'm not saying sell out immediately and just do something you don't want to do. But if you feel Sean, it felt like you were already living in the genre. You love this stuff anyway, so it's just a matter of somebody kind of guiding you a little bit toward what could sell, and not necessarily you wanted to make romantic comedies, and somebody said go make a rape film, and you did that. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I doubt a romantic comedy is coming from me, but those first two films I made were definitely me being a fan of those type of films and going into video stores and seeing similar films to that and then just wanting to emulate it and do the best job I could with it. So, but with They Almost Died, because of the content and kind of like the way we shot it, like that was, like I said, that's the movie that's getting its first release now in November. Like even when I was selling it, like no one wanted to touch it because it was just, I mean, basically the whole film is just a rape scene from like beginning to end.
Well, I haven't seen it. True transparency. I haven't seen it. I know the plot. You want to tell people what They All Must Die is about?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. basically, it starts off with the first shot of the film is a white girl who's in a black neighborhood, and you just see her walking around lost. And literally after that first few seconds where we kind of establish like her being like that fish out of water, there's a gang of black guys across the street yelling racial obscenities at her and welcoming her to the neighborhood in the worst possible way. And one of the guys thinks, hey, like, you know, this girl is hot and she must want me because, hey, I'm the man, you know? So mm-hmm. he goes over to her and, you know, tries to, you know, kick his game to her or whatever. And she really is not having it, but he's kind of delusional. He thinks that, you know, she wants him. And he guarantees his boys, like, hey, we're going to, you know, we're all going to be, like, you know, in there or whatever. And when that doesn't happen and his boys kind of antagonize him more, they continue to harass her, yell racial obscenities. And the way we were shooting this, like, a lot of this stuff was happening, like, on the streets of Bed-Stuy where I live. And at that time in the late 90s, I mean, Bed-Stuy is a little gentrified right now, but back then, wasn't really anyone white in Bed-Stuy. So to see this beautiful, you know, actress walking around and having these guys yell racial obscenities at her, it caused a stir in the neighborhood, needless to say. And then when we actually were to shoot the rape scene, and this girl was very much a method actress, so she was really crying and screaming, and the neighbors were calling the cops, and I had to explain to them, hey, we're just doing a movie. And it was just a very crazy experience shooting it. But yeah, like I said, from the beginning, she's kind of harassed, and the harassing lasts for maybe about 15 minutes, enough to establish the characters. And then after that, it's pretty much them torturing her and raping her for the duration of the film. There is a twist in there with the revenge part, but the rape is pretty much relentless throughout the movie.
And
there's even a lynching in there too, as well.
You can't forget. Yeah, everything. You have to get everything in there, man.
Yeah.
Well, the NYPD did look into the film, and the FBI got involved at one point?
Yes, they did. Basically, what happened was there was a lot of back and forth with the police while we were doing it. We only shot the rape scene in 2 days. Basically, the first night we shot it, the cops came over. We were hoping we were done with it at that point. But one of the lead characters, the main guy who's raping her, the three thugs raping her, the main guy had his underwear on, and we thought we could shoot around it, but because there was, like, bright lighting in the room, as intense as the arguing was, like, getting shots of his underwear on really took away anything from the scene. And also, as we got later into production, there was a lot of tension between the lead actor and that actress, and there was genuine hatred between them at that point. So it was like, I have suspect footage. Like, the footage wasn't what I was looking for. It wasn't going to top I Spit in Your Grave. And I had these actors who hated each other that could bring that actual tension to the screen. So I'm like, you know what? Screw the cops. We got to reshoot this part of the scene. And when we reshot that, again, there was more issues with the cops. They wanted to see the actress. I don't know if she was pissed at me at that point or like what the situation was, but I never got in contact with her again after that day we shot. So it was like I kept having to deal with that issue, like, okay, can you give us her contact number? Like, hey, can we get in contact there to make sure like everything was consensual and everything was okay? And there was a lot of stuff like that going on. And again, because of also what was going on in the film and what was going on behind the scenes, no one was really willing to touch it. In fact, the one time I did get wide distribution before October with MBD, I got it with CreateSpace. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that.
Sure, Amazon's on-demand system for filmmakers.
Yeah, it's basically something where, like, you know, anyone can distribute their films, and like you said, it's on-demand service. And basically, I submitted, you know, my first three projects, Lust for Vengeance, House of the Damned, and Hookers in Revolt. And then I was like, you know what, at this point, like, you know, after a couple months, I'm like, all right, you know, it's time for me to drop the Almost Die. Like, I really want to get this movie out there and see what people think of it. And the minute I gave that to them, they pulled all my movies and they refused to work with me again. Mm. And I was like, this, you can't do this. It's like, you know, it's freedom of speech or whatever. It's like, I have the right to, like, you know, release this stuff. And I remember getting in a shouting match with one of the, she was the head of the department for Create Space. And it took me a while to get her on the phone. I'm just not going to say her name. I don't even remember it. But, yeah, we had like an hour and a half long back and forth conversation where she just kept spewing company lines at me and you know, telling me to refer to this article in the contract and blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, after that, I lost my distribution deal and I didn't get it back till 3 years later, you know, a month ago. So.
They can do that. In fact, one of our films at Wild Eye suffered the same fate at Create Space, where, you know, we sent the film in and, you know, never heard back. And then got a, oh, no, we never got it. Okay, sent it again. Yeah, sorry, the file, you know, it's the wrong format. It needs to be on this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, send it again. No, it doesn't meet our requirements. Please, you know, resend the file. Send the file again. And then finally with a phone call, it's like, yeah, no, it doesn't meet our standards. They didn't say standards, but it was rejected because of content.
And I don't think they can actually say that. I think that's why they refer to the articles. Like, did they tell you anything specific? Or did they try to be vague?
I eventually did get something specific from them, and it just said the nature of the content. It was very vague. It didn't say, oh, you have full frontal nudity, or you have simulated, you know, sexual violence or whatever. And, you know, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's just like the wrong person, so to speak, gets their hands on your film, and, you know, they might bring it to somebody else or something. But then other films I see that have just as vile content or worse content, they're up there being bought and sold with no problem, seemingly. But I just think it's a question of a matter of there's too much stuff going through, so it's a crapshoot. You know, who's going to get your item? But for some reason, I couldn't win with this one title. And they sell the DVD through our distributor.
And that's crazy, people, right?
Yeah. They sell the DVD. They just don't want to allow it for download. So I guess it's okay if a third party sells it, but Amazon proper doesn't want to be associated with your film. And it's the same with your films. Available on Amazon, but they wouldn't take it on Create Space.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, they're available on Amazon through MPD, but yeah.
Right. To their credit, you know, at least they're being honest. They're saying, you know, for us as distributor for it, we're not interested. But if somebody else wants to distribute it, we're not going to take away their right to sell it. So if you can find another distributor who's interested in it, we'll gladly carry it on our site. That's a little bit of a save for them in my book, because they could easily say, you know what, if this title ever shows up again, we're going to ban it no matter who's selling it, and we're going to ban all their other stuff, and MVD will never sell it. They could get really crazy about it if they wanted to.
Well, you're a bigger man than I am, because like I don't give them any credit, you know.
Right.
You know? I just think it's all about the money, and like it's not worth it to them to hassle with small-time filmmakers if it's controversial material.
I agree. Are you bringing Mr.
That Ree? That ring you hear is Mr. Ree.
Oh, jeez. We're going to keep him. Hello, Mr. Ree?
Who?
Mr. Ree?
No, I'm sorry. There's one number.
I'm so sorry. Okay. Hey, that person was just on a radio and they didn't pay us a fee. That was the wrong number, Todd.
Well,
is that the wrong number?
That was the wrong number. No, he doesn't live with his children. Did I give you the wrong number?
I called the one you gave me here.
Oh, I gave you the wrong number.
Great. I don't know who you were calling, but give me the right one.
That's all right. You know what? We'll bring him on because we're not done with Sean yet. Let's do some more time with Sean.
That's fine. I just thought, he could get in on it too.
Well, no, we'll do like another, you know, a few minutes, another 10 minutes or so with Sean, and then all we'll right. bring. Yeah, because then it'll be a free for all. Everybody will be. Gavin and stuff. It might get a little crowded. So now that is his correct number. How you like that? I think I just technically that number was frightening. Oh, calling that poor woman.
Especially because we're like Mr. Ree. She's like, what the hell,
Mr. Ree? Yeah, I'm doing like the stupid voice.
Well, we just did a prank call and didn't even mean to.
The hell with you. I'm sorry, whoever you were. I don't know. It was the person had the same. area code as Mr. Ree, so whoever they are, I'm very sorry, but welcome to the show anyway. I'm gonna go way back, Sean, really quick. Your bio is very interesting to me. You were born in Jonestown?
Yes, I was. Jonestown, Guyana.
Wow.
And my mother was a survivor of the Jonestown Massacre.
Wow.
With Jim Jones. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How? So, wow.
She was pregnant with me at the time. And, you know, she definitely told me a lot of interesting stories about what happened there and all the drug use and all the crazy stuff. And I'd like to get that into a movie one day if I ever get the budget, so...
That's what I was wondering. I mean, has any of this, having that history in your family, while not a witness to it, practically a witness to it, the Jonestown Massacre, if you don't know about it, please get a life and a Google that.
Google drink the Kool-Aid or something.
Yeah, drink the Kool-Aid. I mean, if you're not familiar with Jim Jones and the Jonestown Massacre, 1978, I believe, then you're not on this planet for very long, or you haven't been, I should say. But
actually, was going to play a character that was eerily similar to him in an unfinished project that's on my disc of unfinished movies.
Wow!
And he's going to be the leader of the Colts. It's a movie called Gang vs. Colts.
Yes,
and
yes,
Colts,
yes.
Was going to be led by Jim Jones type character, and I was going to be playing that one. So. I'm really pissed that movie didn't get finished, but I do have it on that disc of unreleased films. So. Wow. Todd, do you have any like unfinished works that you thought about putting together and something like that, or like did you finish everything you started?
Well, a lot of the stuff that was unfinished, I usually finish everything I started, but anything that I have that was unfinished is unfinished for a reason, and I found a trash can, and I made sure to throw it in there.
So self-deprecating, this guy.
I know.
You know.
The next thing he's going to be saying is, please don't buy my movies. You know,
it's like, please don't buy any of my movies before 1993. Thank you.
Oh, no, don't say that.
I'm saying it.
There are a lot of filmmakers who should throw their stuff in the trash can, but they release it. So,
including me.
I heard you going off on Block Talk Radio the other day. On an interview I heard with you, Tom.
Me?
Todd?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't remember.
Oh, okay. No, I was Googling you and I was looking for some videos. I was trying to actually find some trailers. Then I saw a video, I guess it was like maybe like a radio interview. I was on YouTube, and you're talking about like doing the radio show and stuff like that. You mentioned like Blog Talk and like how it's shitty or whatever. I don't mean to curse, sorry about that. But yeah, I mean, because I do a podcast myself, and like I had to deal with them, and it's crazy that they charge you so much now to do a show when they started off free.
Yeah, well, I have a whole. Even though I like some of the people that work with Blog Talk and I understand their incredible professionalism and talent, I think it's a piece of dog crap that basically is ruining the term radio for everybody out here that does real radio, because we can't sell advertising, we can't get sponsors, and everybody with a damn crappy $3 mic from Radio Shack now has a radio show, quote unquote, through Blog Talk, quote unquote, radio, even though it should be called Blog Talk Audio because there's nothing radio about it. They're not broadcasting anywhere. There I go again.
That's what you really think, Todd.
Yeah.
There I go again.
I think it's time for Occupy Jackalope Week 5, Todd, if you don't watch yourself, and I think you know what I mean. Sean, how do you have your films produced? Are you paying out of pocket? Do you have a producer? Money coming
from
somewhere?
Everything is out of pocket. I generally find like the most of my cost comes after I shoot. Like I can somewhat get by with like very little money during production and pre-production and that stuff. But it's usually like after I shoot, like everything you have to do to like put the movie together and like, you know. Package it and stuff like that. That really ends up eating up a lot of your of the money for the production cost. Mm-hmm. But everything is out of pocket. I write my own scripts. I cast my own movies. I do have a partner named Aswad Issa who helps me like creatively, and he does my cinematography and stuff like that. but everything is out of pocket, and I pretty much do it all. And I started acting since 2006 with Hookers and Revolt, and now I pretty much play the lead in all my films as well.
And you also like John Carpenter. You do your own scores.
Yeah, I did for the first few, and now I'm pretty much trying to get like music for all my movies now. From Hookers and Revolt on, I've been trying to get like songs, because I think like some of the better independent films, like, they really have good soundtracks. Like, when I think of like The Harder They Come or Superfly, you know, they have like a lot of scenes in there where it's like there's not much going on, but then when you add the songs in the background, suddenly, like, you know, it brings so much more meaning to like a character walking around in deep thought. You know, our character driving around in deep thought, like the right song playing, like with good lyrics, can actually just add so much more to the film. And
that's true.
That's the direction I've been going with recently.
Okay. Are you finding people that want to give their music up?
I found some, but it's always difficult because, you know, a singer may have like maybe three or four songs, you know, in them, and they look at that as their life, and they look at that as like, hey, you know, some big-time producer or some big-time film guy's going to come and take these off my hands. Like, I don't want to give it to you, you know. Like, you're kind of, like, on the same level as I am. So it's like people are a little protective of their stuff, and they're not realistic with it, you know. So I find it difficult for people, sometimes for artists to, like, license their stuff to me. But, you know, it takes a lot of legwork. But, I mean, I do find enough to get what I need, so.
There's always someone hungry out there that will give a song. I see a lot of independent filmmakers just using, you know, they just want a plug. You know, they just want the band name in the credits or whatever. You can get something.
Yeah. I mean, I offer them, like, a cut in profit sharing and money, you know. But I just think it's, like, a lot of them just wait around for that big break. It's the same thing with, like, filmmakers, too. A lot of filmmakers will just, like, write a script and then, like, look to get it sold rather than just shooting it themselves. So you'll find a lot of that in both ways. But Hookers and Revolt has a soundtrack that's coming out through MVP in January. So
I actually saw that. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's a rap soundtrack.
Underground or some underground rappers in it?
Yeah, it's a guy who does my sound for me. He's been doing sound for me since I started with House of Damp. He was actually one of the actors in there. He was the rapping zombie.
Oh, that's what that's what I was going to say. That was my favorite scene in House of the Damn. Is okay. So without giving away too much, there's some zombies happen. Okay, one of the things in the film that happens, people are turned into zombies. The heroine is grabbed by this undead friend of hers, and he starts rapping to her how she's going to die and why she's going to die. And I just thought that was awesome because he raps for like 2 minutes. It's kind of like the villain who gives away like the whole plot, like, oh, let me tell you why before I kill you. It was like this whole thing where he's like, but he's rapping it. And it was just off the cuff. You could tell he was just making it up right there. And it was funny. I really got a kick out of that. And I also, in House of the Damned, I like the practical effects. I like that you didn't do, you know, a lot of people rely on CGI now, and that's fine, but I like the practical effects. It was a throwback for me to stuff like, you know, Black Devil Doll from Hell, and there was a stop motion with the sneakers, the kitchen knife floating in the air. There was a lot of little, the coat rack going in reverse. There was a lot of just in-camera practical stuff that you were doing that I dug.
Yeah, that was the most fun part of doing the film. It's like after it was finished, it's like, all right, now how do we figure out a way to get special effects in here? I'm like, how do we do this without any money? You know,
right? Exactly. You just do it stop motion.
Yeah,
and the house coat going up the stairs.
Yeah. It had like a giant. It was actually kind of hard because the stick I used was so heavy because it was so long. I had to take it all the way to the bottom of the stairs. It had to reach to the bottom, and I was all the way at the top of the stairs, and I had to like pull the coat all the way up the stairs. And it was just, but it was fun though. It was fun getting creative and trying to figure that stuff out.
Everyone in your films, are they friends? Do you actually put a call out for actors? And these are people who who have done acting before? How does it work for you, the process of getting people to star in the films?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that, because that's actually something I wanted to ask you and Todd about as well. Like, for me, starting off, like, with my first film, House of the Damned, it was mainly just friends and family. And after that, They Almost Die On, I really started casting. And I tend to reuse a lot of same actors that I enjoy working with. And the type of movies I do, honestly, if I can get some guys that are decent actors, I'll use them as much as I can. And it makes it easier because I know what they can bring to the table. I know their strengths and weaknesses, so I can write around them. I can write parts for them. And with the type of movies I do, it's just basically trying to get the hottest girls I can. You know, it's like, I'm doing Hookers and Revolts. How many hot chicks can I get that can actually, like, remember a couple lines? And that's basically my approach to acting. I'm like, which chicks are willing to do nudity or love scenes and things like that, you know? I'll be honest.
Here's a director who knows his end user, Todd. You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
Yeah. The hottest chick that can act, that's it, who will take her clothes off. And that's what the public wants. Exactly. It's that simple, everyone. It is that simple. It really comes down to it. You can write your books and your dissertations, and you can, you know, create your little fanzines and radio shows trying to dissect these films, but that's what it comes down to. How hot is she, and does she take her clothes off?
Basically. That's what it comes down to. It's the bottom line for a lot of parts and a lot of movies, but I'm just being honest about it, I guess. So, but I actually want to ask you guys, like, both of you guys have done films before. I thought about, you know, going towards the route. There are two things I thought about for, like, trying to get my stuff mainstream. One is getting it rated by the MPAA, and I just think they're a freaking scam. They ask you for so much money just to give you a rating on your film. And if you read through all their paperwork, which I'm sure you guys have probably gone through that process, they can reject your movie and say, hey, you know, this is just like X-rated, or this is NC-17. And to even have them look at it again, it's going to cost you another arm and a leg. And it's like a minimum amount of money. I think it's at least $10,000 to get your film rated. And I just think that's a huge scam.
I think they charge $20,000 if the name of the movie is Hookers in Revolt. I don't know. That's what I've heard. I've never dealt with them. I don't know. Maybe Todd has, because he's worked for other filmmakers as well in different levels of the business. So I'm not sure. But I think at our level, at what you're doing, Sean, I don't think you need to even consider them. I think you could, you know, keep doing what you're doing until there's, you know, you work it out where you got a budget for that kind of thing and you're already built into your film budget, if that's the way you want to go with it.
Yeah. You know what it was at the time? I wasn't with MVD, and this was like kind of around the time where I was dropped from CreateSpace, and I was looking into Blockbuster, and they were like, yeah, we'll carry your stuff if it's rated. And even on the website for Netflix, they were talking about that as well. It's like, hey, you know, if your film is rated.
I have stuff on Netflix through Wild Eye that's not rated by the MPAA. I don't know if that's just something they tell independent filmmakers to get rid of them because they know most independent filmmakers can't afford that. You know, a lot of these places, you have to understand, they don't want to deal with 100,000 different filmmakers. You know, they just want to deal with a place like MVD that's going to push hundreds of products to them, and they just have to sign one check. You know, so a lot of times when you go to these places like Netflix and Blockbuster, they really don't want to give you the time of day. I mean, they will. They'll be nice to you and, you know, very pleasantly tell you to go to hell, but, you know, as long as I've been doing this, I've never dealt with somebody saying, oh, you have to get your film rated. Now, there are certain things where if you want to, you know, there are certain film boards, like in Canada and the UK, where if your film's going to get distributed there, it has to have a certificate for distribution. That's not a rating, but you do have to pay a fee. You know, it might be $500 so that your film could be distributed there. And, you know, that's BS as well. And somebody's, you know, making that money. But they do have things like that, that as an independent filmmaker, you'll have to deal with. But I don't think MPA ratings until, you know, stuff's going to get into theaters and not independent theaters. And you're going to get into Lowe's or whatever, you know, you won't have to deal with that. Todd, do you have any?
It's definitely not cost effective either.
No, no, it's ridiculous. How many films can you make for that $10,000 fee, you know?
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. What? Who's influenced you, Sean? I want to, because we're getting close to the end. I'm going to bring our reviewer on. When you're welcome to stay on the phone, and we'll still talk about your stuff. Sure. But directors that influenced you, if you've got a couple names, we know what genre you're working in. We know it's exploitation, horror, softcore, rape, revenge, murder, slit throats, boobies.
Yeah. With all that said, my favorite filmmakers are like Stanley Kubrick and Orson Welles and Akira Kurosawa and guys like that.
Of course, of course. That's always the way it goes. You see, you talk to Todd Sheets and he's like, yeah, man, I love Zombie Bloodbath, blah, blah, blah. Who's your favorite director? Oh, Frank Capra. You know, it's like, it's always some kind of it's always some kind of ridiculous thing these guys come up with, these directors.
No.
You guys are a breed of your own.
Not Frank Capra, please.
Okay. Well, that's mine. And I wanted to quickly touch on, because your films are, I guess, in the urban horror, urban thriller category. I think that blaxploitation as a genre is due for some kind of resurgence, and I think it is an independent film like it was in the beginning, starting with Melvin Van Peebles. And I saw some of that influence in what I saw of your films, and I wondered if you consider yourself working in that tradition, or is that something you don't want to be associated with, or you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I love Sweet Badass Song and a lot of blaxploitation films. I mean, the way I look at blaxploitation films is, I guess they're like, you know, black versions of big Hollywood productions, like, you know, made for black people with a black cast. And ironically, some of the more popular ones weren't made by black filmmakers. But, yeah, I love some of those films, but... I mean, I would say as far as like through the heart of it, where it's just like a black filmmaker making a film, with black people in it and with urban themes, then yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of what I do. And if you put in the fact that I kind of use exploitation, tactics, like I do exploit like the sex and drugs and taboo subjects that go with the exploitation genre, then yeah, I guess I am a blaxploitation filmmaker from that standpoint. So.
Well, but of a new generation, because you say, something like Black Caesar, which is considered a classic of the genre, is directed by a nice Jewish boy. You know, it's like that kind of stuff is always overlooked, and everybody focuses on, oh, Fred Williamson, kick ass, blah, blah, you know, which is true. But you have to understand how these films were remade, were true blaxploitation, you know, the sweet, sweet back, something like that is, you know, not, it's always categorized together with that stuff. And I think there's a whole, and I mean, I think Tyler Perry's exploitation, you know, I think Tyler Perry, if he was making those movies in the 70s, it would be like, you know, when they made like the Mom's Mabley movie or something, you know what I mean? It's like that, it has that same kind, it would be packaged like that, you know? And I think
it's, maybe it wouldn't be shot like a soap opera though.
Yeah, but I think it's valid, and I think it has an audience, and it makes a ton of money, and that's great. And I think there's a whole little, not even a subgenre, because there's tons of money. I see all the time, see like urban themed, like horror movies and gangster movies and dramas, and nobody's talking about that stuff. I wish somebody would write a book on what's happening since 1985 in the blaxploitation genre. No one's bothered to touch it. It's always because it's like all direct to video or stuff. But you have to understand, like, all the stuff you love, you know, with Antonio Vargas in it, it was stuff that was playing at the drive. It was all dumped off in drive-ins and everything, you know, back then. So it's the same mentality. I you know, maybe it'll have a resurgence someday. But I think that's definitely, you're in a tradition that is still strong, that many people don't know about, and you're doing a very extreme version of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look in the box of Hookers and Revolt, it says retro blaxploitation on the cover, so I'm definitely familiar with the genre,
and I would
fall into the category.
Well, made me think of that as your tagline when it comes up, Free Film Company, it says, sticking it to the man. And I'm like, oh, it's clearly a wink to, you clearly hate us white guys, you know? No, I mean, you clearly are, you know, playing with those, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know what the word is, but you're playing in that genre. You're playing in that kind of, it's a little Spike Lee, kind of like, you know, just kind of owning it, so.
Yeah, 40 Acres and Enemy Old type thing.
But, yeah, exactly. Oh, Spike Lee joint.
I know my time is kind of running out. I just want to
touch we're gonna bring Mr. Ree in, and then we'll have him on the line. But we can keep going, Sean.
Cool. No, I just wanted to say. I mean, you asked me a question earlier, and I kind of got sidetracked about the casting thing. I was actually going to ask you guys about that. In that, I looked into getting SAG actors into my film, and I was shocked at the amount of paperwork they mailed to my house. It was like a dictionary.
It's a nightmare.
Of paperwork. And you have to sign away so much rights to your films and abide to their rules and regulations. It's just ridiculous. It almost becomes their film. Have you guys ever dealt with that at all?
I have.
I haven't.
Lucky bastard.
Well, let me tell you guys something. You know, the great thing, the reason, you know, you have five films that were just released, and they're, you know, you do a Google search, they're available everywhere, you know. That, and, you know, you can go to this website, that website, where, you know, get the best deal, blah, blah, blah. There's with stuff like Create Space, I know you had a problem with them, but I'm just talking filmmakers in general. Now is the best time for filmmakers to not deal with that old school stuff like the MPA, the SAG. You can really get around. There's really, you know, somebody like John Waters didn't, you know, had so many more problems than you're going to have doing an exploitation film today because the hurdles have been broken. It's kind of like, you know, we're just releasing this movie, whether you like it or not. You know, Ready or Not world, here's the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's another, you know, and as you get bigger and as people, you know, want to throw money at your next production, somebody says, oh, look, I love this movie. I love what you did with this. Let's see what you can do with this amount of money right here. Then you can look into, well, we can get one SAG actor out of that. And yes, you'll have to do the paperwork, but we can afford them, and I want this person because of whatever reason. Did you deal with that? You had a...
It's not even just that. It's the fact that they have to get script approval from your script. You have to submit it to them, and they have to approve it.
I think a lot of that might be technicality. Todd, you can correct me. Did you ever – was Rudy Ray Moore SAG? Todd, I know you worked with him.
Well, he was, but they were giving him a hard time, so he gave him the finger.
Oh, okay.
He stuck it to the man, huh?
He did.
He stuck it to the man, and I think he did that a lot in his life. God rest his soul.
Was that the one SAG actor you work with, Todd, or did you?
I've worked with a couple others, but the problem is SAG takes so much of their money, they don't make any money either. Yeah. I feel sorry for them. They don't make any money because they're paying all these dues and they're paying all this crap, and then they got agents, and by the time they're done, man, those poor people don't make any money.
Yeah. They say like 1% of actors like make a living just acting, and I kind of believe that statistic.
Mr. Ree's coming.
Oh, good. We can get a one-hour review in 2 minutes. I love doing this to him.
Yeah, he'll love you for it. Because you basically have about 4 minutes.
Oh, do I really?
Hello?
Oh, we got Mr. Ree!
Yo!
Good evening!
Hello, most honorable Robison.
Yes. Very good to make your acquaintance this evening. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to bring you on because we've been having such a good time with Sean here. Talking about his films, we ran a little bit over talking about independent filmmaking and everything. I don't want to recap the show. People are listening to it. Come on, man.
That's right.
Did you happen to have any movie reviews for us?
Well, I do. In fact, you want a little thumbnail review? Yes.
I know your thumbnails usually start with, well, let me tell you what I'm thinking. So, yeah, let's try this. Let's try to get a one-hour review in a minute and a half. We got about 4 minutes left here.
Well, let me preface my introduction by explaining.
Thank you very much for joining us, Sean. Thank you. Quickly, what do you got for us from bmovie.com?
Let me rave. I'm frothing at the mouth. Ted V. Michaels, as you and everybody else knows, is one of my favorite filmmakers.
He's like a father to me.
He's like a weird uncle to me.
He doesn't know it, but he's like a father. Go ahead.
He kind of makes his brothers or cousins or something. No, Ted, love Ted. Love his movies. Corpse Grinders, I think, is a fantastic movie. Astro Zombies, great movie.
Yes, yes, people know who he is. Go on.
The guy, guys been making movies for 40-some years. His newest movie, I believe it's his newest movie, is Demon Haunt. Mm. 2008, 2009, I don't know, probably took him 3 or 4 years to make this movie. It is fantastic. It is, okay, well, first of all...
Sublime.
Possibly sublime. Sublemon lime, even.
Yeah.
As far as... it's shot on video. Well, okay, Ted, if you don't know Ted's movies, they're all low budget.
Here comes the 2-hour review. See, this is what I was talking about, Todd.
Just let me know when I've got one.
Let's assume everyone listening knows Ted Michaels' movies, and if you don't, then you can look them up.
Well, okay.
Demon Haunt. Let's talk about the movie you review.
Demon Haunt. Ted's shooting on video now, which is a major drawback. I mean, most of the charm of his films. Are the beauty of his films are the film itself, the medium. Shooting on video makes it look cheap, makes it look whatever, like a home movie. But still, Ted's enthusiasm cannot be harnessed. It cannot be compromised by crappy video. So this video, the DVD has a commentary by Ted, which I strongly recommend you watch while you're watching the movie. It definitely helps. The only drawback is Ted needs a moderator. He's done commentaries for his other movies, for Astro Zombies, Corpse Grinders, etc.
Ted is a man alone. He's an island. He doesn't need a moderator. Next movie, Todd.
No,
he needs
a moderator because there's a million questions I have about the movies, but he's not answering the questions. Basically,
he doesn't have to answer them. The guy's like he's been doing this forever. He doesn't have an answer to you.
Well, Ted and the audio commentary is sort of a technology that Ted isn't that up to speed with.
But,
so basically what he's doing
is brilliant.
The movie, he's telling you what's happening on the screen. Well, now he's walking into the kitchen. Well, now he says this, which drives you crazy because you want to know, like, what the hell were you thinking, Ted? Just all kinds of questions I have for Ted. Anyway, I think it would really help in the future if he ever does commentaries to have somebody moderating with him.
Well, strongly recommended Demon Haunt at bmovie.com or your favorite corner bodega.
It's very cheap. It's a cheap DVD.
It's cheap.
And
$5. $5.
The CGI is amazingly terrible.
How about that car crash?
Barrel. Oh my God. It's like somebody.
Next movie. We're
like
running out of time. It's like a what?
It's like an 8-year-old is animating this stuff. And on the commentary, he's talking about how long the CGI took to create. It's amazing. He's like, this scene took 3 weeks to do. Like, really, Ted? 3 weeks? I could do it in two seconds. Anyway,
we have to have Ted on the show sometime. That would be an honor.
We had him on the Grindhouse.
Forget about that. Give me Ted Michaels, Todd.
All right, we'll do it.
Bring me Ted Michaels.
You have 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Head of
you're gone. What's the other movie? Just the name.
A middling review for a film called My Stepdad's a Freaking Vampire, which is a terrible title.
Okay, so it's like, you say not so great, maybe okay, rent it, don't buy it. Okay, thank you, bye. Now, Sean.
No, hold on. Now, Mr. Ree, I want to tell you, we're going to make this up to you next week. You're going to be on longer.
You're coming back on. You know, I told Mr. Ree if we have a special guest, he's gotta understand. It's not his show. He's gotta understand. now let me please. The Honorable Sean Weathers is with us. Let me say my goodbyes to him, Mr. Ree, without interruption.
Hurry.
You promise me to do that? Sean, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Thank you, sir. Now
I'm sorry, Mr. Ree, I took up all your time.
Sean,
not at all.
It's the other way around. Yes, we just live in it, Sean. Hookers in Revolt. Seriously, write these down, all right? Hookers in Revolt, House of the Damned, Lust for Vengeance, They All Must Die. It sounds like The Weekend at My House and the unfinished works of Sean Weathers, all on DVD now, reasonably priced, bmovie.com. Sean Weathers, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back again when your new movies come out, and we'll talk about those. You've got 5 movies in the works. We're going to have you back. Thank you for coming on.
thank you so much. I just want to say also my website, fullcirclefilmworks.com. You can find my movies as well as information on my podcast, which airs Wednesdays at 9 p.m.
Or you can find them through his movies at bmovie.com. Thank you again, Sean. This has been Movies
Thanks, HU. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
You are welcome. We are sponsored by bmovie.com, and Mr. Ree is not. Good night.
I'm exhausted.
Thank you.